This one. Okay, so Robin, when you're ready.
Hi, Helen.
Hi.
I've attended a couple of satsangs this week, and they were reading out the homework from lesson two about cause and effect. And there was quite a lot of discussion about this. And I also had a conversation with one of my buddies, Al, about this topic. And I'm not really very clear on this. I can understand that feelings are uncaused, like peace and joy. There's no cause for them. They're the noumenon. They just arise, basically. So I've experienced that. My question is to do really with one's physical reality, so to speak. So from what we talked about on the satsang was that cause and effect are the same. So I can understand, what you talk about in the lesson that, people are, they try and have a relationship or do something on a physical level in order to feel better, and it doesn't really work like that. I completely understand that. But what we're doing, like statement processes or constant imagining, seems like we're trying to change our beliefs or our feelings about what is happening externally. Like maybe I have some problem with my body, so I look into what is the story behind it, what is the emotion, and then I'm expecting that if I become aware of that emotion or, I find out what's going on, then my external reality will, so to speak, change. But it seems like what you're saying, cause and effect being the same, is that is not the correct thing. The other thing which I want to bring into this is, because it made me think about this, I think I wrote to you on the WhatsApp about, my mother's family trauma and about clearing that. And you wrote about, there is no me, there is no I. So whatever you clear, then everything clears for everybody, so to speak. But that's was my understanding. So you told me to inquire a bit into that. So I did inquire into it, and I sort of came, what was coming up was feeling a victim, not being supported, this type of thing. So again, in relation to cause and effect, I don't know, I'm maybe not articulating my question very clearly. It's very difficult to express this because I've just got a sort of a feel for it. But I hope you understand what I'm asking you.
So let me start by the whole we experienced this on the graduate program WhatsApp group that we've got yesterday, I think, didn't we? That cause and effect, the understanding that they're not different, not separate, not two things, which we look at in lesson two, is very difficult to understand. And then all of a sudden, it's just completely obvious. And for me, there was nothing in between that. So I tried to grapple with it over and over again, get my head around it, get my understanding straight. I always felt like it was eluding me until one day I didn't do anything different than the day before. The times I tried to understand this before. And it just suddenly became clear that one thing causing another thing to happen. Or one being doing something to another being, which leads to a certain result, or not doing something that they should have done, cannot be ultimately true. So, because those two things are really just one. So, if for cause and effect to be two different things, it have to be two different things in the universe. So, from the deepest understanding, like lesson four, everything is made of the same substance. And there is no independent phenomena separate to each other. They're really just different appearances, different clouds coming and going in the sky, different waves on the ocean surface. So, for one thing to cause another, there has to be two things, the existence of duality. And duality doesn't really exist, it just seems to. So The example that was given in the scriptures that helped me was this idea that a crow flies in and lands on a coconut tree branch. And as the crow lands on the branch, the coconut that was hanging from that branch falls on the floor. So the mind would say that the bird landing on that branch caused the coconut to fall because of the extra weight, etc., right? Something like that, or the impact, whatever it was. And that is relatively true in the world of phenomena and manifestation. In the ultimate truth, it's not true, because there is no crow, there is no coconut, there is no tree, and there is no separate observer to those events. They're all made of the same one substance. So mind then it takes that information and says, yeah, but what caused the coconut to fall then, if it wasn't the bird landing on the branch? Our mind can't seem to understand because it's still trying to get this in duality. So did the coconut fall from the tree? Yes and no. And both answers are correct. Nothing happened at all. And also the bird landing on the tree caused the coconut to fall. So as I'm saying all of this, probably everyone's glazing over and going, I really just don't get what's going on here. Don't get this. I would just say it's enough to hear it again and again. Don't try to understand it. Can you be okay with being confused about this? In fact, if we're confused about this, it's a good sign for me. It means that our mind has already tried to figure it out and can't, realizing it can't. And it's a letting go of efforting or trying to understand. So success in understanding this cause and effect stuff is not really coming to an aha moment. It's coming to an experiential place where I don't feel divided. When I look at another human body, I don't believe that they're separate to me and they can cause something to happen to me. Cause is this person and what they do or don't do. The effect is what happens inside me. Without that belief that we're two, with the realization that we're one, then what that body can actually do to this body is very limited in terms of actions, choice of actions. My undivided consciousness, I'm going to say the word projects over their body mind, but it doesn't because it's enveloping it. But for want of a better word, my knowing that I am not separate to that being actually effectively removes any possibility of them harming me. Psychologically, physically, everything. Even if they're not awakened themselves, still has that same effect. So, and I'm saying all this so that we try to relax from trying to get lesson two, because you can't get it that way. And I'm sure you've tried like everyone else. It's more about the realization that I'm trying to understand oneness from a place of two-ness, the mind. The mind chooses between these two options, cause and effect, and tries to figure out which one is which. But if they're both the same thing, then the deepest understanding we can come to through the mind is that the mind cannot get this, cannot really grasp it. So what happens in your body when you're listening to all of this? Does it bring up, what happens inside your body when you're listening to this?
Well, I'm getting this thought coming to me that what you call seeing is outside of the mind.
Yes.
And when that thought comes to me, then there's a relaxation in the body.
Yeah. And you didn't have an epiphany and you didn't have an aha moment. You haven't suddenly understood anything. There's just a conscious recognition that the tool I'm trying to use, the mind, to understand this is not adequate, not able to do so, not to do any fault of the mind. The mind is a machine that sorts things into opposites, good and bad, wanted, not wanted, hot, cold, rich, poor, well or ill. And it does that constantly. So we're trying to understand this thing called oneness where there's only one thing appearing an infinite number of ways through a mechanism that sorts things into twos. And that's why we feel so inside, you know, and it's come up several times in the questions that were sent in earlier that Natasha was reading out. So just kind of gently feeling around that relaxation, there's a curiosity, like, there's something here I can't grasp with my mind. I can't make any effort to understand it. Any effort to understand it only seems to cloud it over. So I'm just going to kind of metaphorically just sit here, not literally, and you know, go about your life, but and just be curious. What is that? What is that? I'd really like to just know. And I'm going to, like you would, you go into a restaurant and the waiter comes over and you order something off the menu and then you sit back and relax while they cook it. You're not running into the kitchen asking if it's ready yet. They'll bring it out when it's ready. So I'm just going to order the understanding of this to come to me, and I'm going to relax. I'm going to do nothing to try to understand it or make it happen. I'm going to exert no effort towards it. Because we're coming up against the core reason that most people don't awaken here, which is, I take the information I'm given from the class, from the teacher, from the teaching, from the book, and I try to apply it and understand it. And mind makes a certain amount of effort. The seeker makes a certain amount of effort to do that each and every time, right? And then at some point, the self that's in the background constantly hearing the information is becoming more and more familiar. There is no cause and effect as separate things. There is no cause and effect as separate things. And it's just taking it in and it's eating it and it's eating it and it's eating it. And at a certain point, it becomes familiar. I've heard it enough times that it's familiar. And that's when suddenly it becomes obvious and clear. So it's about repetition rather than efforting to understand. Something that seems really confusing can suddenly be obvious. And the time between how long that takes is how much I'm efforting to try to understand it. It's the opposite of what we're taught to do, isn't it? Not if I give you a problem in the world, go figure out how to build this building. Here's a blueprint. You go build this building. Then mind starts to effort to make a plan and all the rest of it. And here we're learning the opposite here. I'm just going to open and invite the understanding to just land in my lap as a spontaneous insight and epiphany that just happens, not as a result of trying to figure it out. And you can just kind of order those from the universe. That's what's always been. Anytime you've ever really just come to understand anything, it's never been through effort. And something just lets go, right? Can you feel something just going? It's totally okay, normal, expected even that I feel confused about this.
What curiosity, what is curiosity? Is it an aspect of the mind? Is it beyond the mind?
I love that question. What is curiosity? Hmm. What happens when you ask yourself that?
It's like, wonder, basically.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
It's not a thought process, is it?
No.
It's not efforting like either.
Just wondering about something.
Like it's you did as a kid. Almost.
It's like a playfulness, actually.
Yeah. Oh, now you're getting it. It's like and if you just approach this whole cause and effect thing from there, I'd really like to know what that is. Like it's a Christmas present wrapped in paper and you pick it up and shake it and it makes a noise and you just can't figure out what it is. No amount of touching it, feeling it in your hands and shaking it and listening and feeling the weight of it is going to tell you what it is. And it's just this, it'll come soon enough and you know on Christmas morning you're going to get to open it. So you just relax best you can and be really curious. And during that time, your mind's going to try to figure out, well, I did ask for this, this, and this on my list, but could it be that? No. And it's trying, mind's doing its thing. But meantime, you're just lying there in bed and you're excited because you know the answer's coming.
Can you live your life in total curiosity? Like yes. Every day is just curious?
Oh, yes,
curiosity.
That is lesson four in a nutshell.
Yeah. That sounds very exciting.
You're feeling it now. You're experiencing it now, aren't you?
Yeah.
And from this place, you're wide open and magnetic. You're so attractive to these insights that just like, I have to come to you. Because you just, you are, curiosity really is a synonym for the self. It's deeply curious about all these phenomena that are just happening inside it. All these shapes it's playing with. And there's something, even if you don't find any answer, the curiosity itself is nice enough, isn't it? It becomes quite blissful, quite ecstatic, actually, as you first just deeply content and exciting and then peaceful. And then as you stay with it, it's just like being a child, but you've got all the kind of the adult wisdom, the mental concepts that you can use if you want to. This is the awakened state you're experiencing right now. You didn't effort to get it, did you?
No.
You asked this beautiful question. I absolutely love it. What is curiosity? Curiosity about curiosity itself. Something has to powerfully, atomically explode inside you from that. And it comes from this understanding that the way I was trying to figure it out isn't really working. And I don't have to blame myself for that. It's just the only tool I've been told how to use, the mind. Now I'm going to use this curiosity. See, what's it like to approach this lesson two stuff from here? Like everything, and literally everything that you could experience then is a Christmas present wrapped up under the tree. Your whole life, you're just kind of walking through life going, ooh, look at that, wow. Trying to pretend to be an adult on the outside because that's what everyone expects of you, but inside you're just like this little 4 or 5 year old kid.
Yeah, it's nighttime here in Japan. I think from tomorrow when I wake up, I'm going to live the rest of my life from curiosity. It'll be fun. It'll be exciting.
That is quite possibly the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. So I deeply applaud that. And I would love to hear the outcome of that as the rest of your life. You know, it's really just letting go of using the mind, but without rejecting it. We've seen that the mind has its limitations. So the mind starts to argue and push, you know, talk about the mind in a negative way. But the self just, okay, that's just not the best tool for a job, for this job. Trying to use a screwdriver when I need a spanner. You don't actually go to wall with a screwdriver, do you? You just put it down and pick up a spanner. Yeah, there you go. You're getting it there. Look at that. That's, yeah. Wonderful.
Thank you, Helen.
Wonderful, definitely. Thank you. Brilliant question. Thank you. Amy?
Hi, Helen.
It's a tough act to follow, isn't it, Robin? I know. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah. You know when you feel like you're at school and someone's just done like a star thing and then you're kind of like, oh no.
I just recited the times table backwards and you're like,
I'm going to bring it really back to basics for me. Have you any advice of when you're meditating the 20 minutes, if the mind starts coming in with, oh, what if this doorway would be better, or what if this doorway would be better, and you're just like, oh, I don't know if you've any kind of, yeah, I kind of really resonated with here, and that has been just fantastic as a kind of person that's always not wanted to be here.
Yeah.
It's just been really fantastic. But then, yeah, maybe I feel like a bit like a kid in a candy shop, a little bit wanting to try all. And I don't know if you have any advice.
There's that curiosity again, right? This doorway, when I go in this way, it feels this way. Oh, I'm here. And, what about that door? You know, here's this five-year-old going, okay, I've done that one. I want to go around this one, you know, and we might go around and around all 14 doors. And for me, it was the same. The moment I felt like I'd, and you never really got it, but really got what awareness was, or I amness, so it was like, oh my word, that's the same as a sense of existence. And then, wait, but existence is utterly quiet. It's not making any noise. It's silent. And then, wait, but silence isn't moving, it's still. And it was just this 20-minute love fest of all the different ways my mind could think about all the different doorways. Because I finally felt like, and I'm going to say the words getting somewhere, but you know what I mean? I felt like I was actually really spending some real time abiding as myself for brief periods, you know, till the mind would do its thing again. But so there's two reasons this is happening usually in meditation. The first is resistance. Oh, this wasn't working for me. Let's try this one. But you could feel that when the mind suggests, okay, let's try this one, that it's come with some negative feeling, emotion, or constriction in the body, tension, if it's resistance. And it will probably do that at some point. But if it comes with excitement and anticipation and a sense of curiosity, it's like you've got this brilliant jewel in front of you and it's got an infinite number of faces, facets on it. And you've looked at one, oh, that's so immensely beautiful. And then you turn it around, you want to look at this one. And you just see that there's an infinite number of them and you just want to spend forever looking at them, each one individual, unique, each face different to all the rest. But it couldn't exist without that one face, silence or stillness or consciousness. So does it come with a uplifting feeling when that's happening in meditation? Does it come with tension or is there a bit of both?
I think there's a, what does it come with? It comes with, I wonder what it would be like to try it this way, but I think there is a hint of, I wonder if this way would be even better. So I think there is a bit of that sort of creeping in. And it was interesting that, with the contextual field, that had a different flavor to it. And there was a kind of fear rose up with that one. So maybe if there's different flavors coming up, that's not quite getting it, maybe. Not that there's anything to get, but.
Yeah, you can see that this one my mind really likes, you know, because I've been doing it for, I've been awareness, I know about awareness. Contextual field feels a bit risky because it's quite immediate. And for me, it was the clearest way after the silence that I could perceive myself, but it also brought the most resistance to it because of that. So just noticing that, okay, can I just use the resistance as the specific phenomena that I'm noticing in the field or the fear or whatever? In reality, probably you're going to have some excitement and resistance at the same time. You can't really get it wrong, though, can you? If you go around all 14 doorways in 20 minutes, or you stay at one door and just kind of you're resting in the stillness, and then you rest, you know, you're aware of thoughts, and then you're going back to stillness and thoughts and stillness, thoughts, stillness, thoughts. It doesn't matter, really. It's just this tendency to say these 14 things are different and therefore I need to find the right one and avoid the wrong one.
That was, yeah, I think that was creeping in. If I wonder if this would get you there faster as though there was somewhere to get.
So eventually, and the more that you fall in love with silence, the more you realize the contextual field is silent. The here-ness doesn't have any sound to it, does it? I'm here, absolutely silent and completely still. So investigating any one of them will open all the doors. Or you can you know, swap and change at will, so to speak, and you'll get the same place, because you're only seeing clearer what you are. And sometimes it's easier to look from this angle. You know, if I've got a lot of fear, I might not be able to feel a sense of stillness in that moment, because there's a lot of movement going on in the body of this intense emotion. But I might be able to notice that I'm aware of this fear. So that might work better that day, that particular time. You know, so for me, the stillness, I fell in love with the stillness when I was really acutely aware of resistance, this resistance that just did not want to do this, this real pig-headed stubbornness. I do not want to meditate today. This real toddler tantrum, you know, I'm sitting down having a tantrum. And it just seemed to really highlight that there's something that's already sitting down still. It just, you know, this resistance would not move forward. And so different times, even during the same meditation, certain things seem more accessible than others. But I hope I'm just leaving you with this sense that you can't really get it wrong, because something's already falling in love, isn't it? Can you feel that you're already falling in love? The greatest love affair ever. And gradually more of that curiosity will come to the surface and less of the resistance. If you want the fast route, then get curious about what the resistance is. But it'll go on its own anyway. It's because it's a very direct form of meditation. It's the most direct. It's going to bring up some resistance and some kind of mind trying to avoid it somehow, trying to think about the awareness so they don't actually have to experience it. It's clever.
Yeah.
If I think about which is the best doorway, then I don't actually have to try.
Yeah.
You get it, right?
Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Good to talk to you. Lofter?
Hello again.
Hi, how are you doing? You look nice and comfy.
Yeah, I am. First I want to say I always feel this kind of unworthiness when I'm about to ask something, like I'm not supposed to or something. That's why I'm doing it, to plow through that, I guess.
Good.
I guess many people know this feeling somehow, I shouldn't be asking or asking too much or something. So,
I've had that feeling, who the hell am I to be running a Zoom class like this, you know? you don't let it stop you in the end, do you? You just kind of go ahead anyway, which is what you're doing, which is beautiful. So well done.
Thank you. So during the first lesson, I asked you, you said that awareness is always here. I was asking you about that, because somehow in my experience, that was not true. And after you talked about it, and all the time since that lesson, somehow something changed. Like I had this feeling that there is something there. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is something I've heard 1,000 times, but never really. It hit me, and it was this, that I always had this feeling that if I can't keep my attention on it 100% of the time, then I'm not doing it right, or I'm failing or something.
Yeah.
But you said it's not possible.
Yeah.
And I guess I was confusing those two things, awareness and attention.
Yeah, and technically they are the same, but you could say that attention is the faculty of awareness when it's looking through a human body. It can pay attention to something or another thing, or turn around and look back at itself, right?
Yeah. So I somehow had this sense that there is something there, and it hasn't really left me, even if I'm stuck in thoughts or something, then the attention comes back and I realize, no, it didn't really go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said many times, there's a relaxation that happens as soon as you realize that you don't need to try so hard.
Yeah.
It's going to happen by itself somehow.
Eventually, and it doesn't matter where the attention is then, does it really? I mean, your body feels nicer when attention is looking at the awareness. When you're consciously aware of awareness, the body relaxes and the mind slows down. But the awareness is there nonetheless, isn't it? And it's been there forever.
it's very comforting to realize this.
Yeah. And you can just chill out then, right? Because we've had this monumental struggle to try to be aware of awareness 24/7, and you just, nobody can do it. Nobody needs to do it.
One more thing.
Yeah.
I'll be quick.
It's okay.
I think you've been tricking me in the most playful way.
And yeah.
The reason I say this is because you've been pretending to talk to me, but really when I become aware of this awareness or this background, then I have the sense that you're really talking to that and not to me directly. Do you understand?
I have to sometimes appear to talk to the separate being. And then really I'm always talking to the awareness.
Yeah.
Which is the same awareness, two different bodies, right? So actually you tricked you, not me.
And when I had this thought, she's tricking me, she's not really talking to me, she's talking to that thing.
Yeah.
And then the next question that comes, and what is that thing?
Oh, I like that. What happens when you ask that? Gently, curiously, what is that thing?
Yeah,
something's always been here. It's just, you don't need to like give me word answers, but just to feel that out with me here, like, what is that thing? It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. And it has this, of course, it's difficult to describe, but it has this softness somehow. And
gentle.
It's like, sometimes when I listen to your satsangs or your meditations, and I've listened to them thousands of times, so thank you for that. But when you speak in your soft voice, and I feel, okay, she's talking to that thing, it's like I step out of the way. I just, what's this interaction between you and that thing? Difficult to describe, but I think
you've done really well there, really well, because it is infinitely powerful. It creates the entire cosmos, that thing, but it's also exquisitely gentle and soft, and it loves everything.
Yes.
Loves
even the pain.
Even the pain. It doesn't even see pain. It just sees, here's another beautiful, individual, unique sculpture. It doesn't call it good or bad or wanted or not wanted. It can embrace everything equally, can't it? From resistance and pain to bliss to peace, everything.
Yes.
I'd say you're really getting lesson one, you know? Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Just keep relaxing into it. Just gently curious, which seems to be the theme of today's class. What is that? What is that thing? You know, just a deep curiosity. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Okay. We'll go to Elaine.
After that, I probably don't have to say wanted to say, I am here, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I think Lofta just and did that really well.
Yeah. Could you be absent? Your body could be somewhere else, couldn't it? In your mind.
Yeah, I feel that there is a lot of absence of what used to be, I think, which is what's leading me to question, am I here? Or am I just making this all up? I wish I'm going to say yes, but I mean, how do I know I'm in the same place as who I might be talking to? Or if we're all.
Are you making this up? Well,
yeah.
Yes, but aren't we all, really?
Mm.
And from that place, as we've been calling it, that place, that thing, also known as reality or awareness, whatever we're calling it. Can you have a different experience than me? Because to answer that question from the mind, you've got to take that experience of that body mind and this experience of this body mind and somehow think they're separate from each other, and then compare who's got the better experience. And then you're in duality, which is fine, but it's always going to leave you with one's better than the other. Or you'll be comparing this experience you're having in this moment to the one you had an hour ago, or, you know, 25 years ago, or whatever it was, right? So from the place of reality, of awareness, you must be having the same experience as me. That understanding helps you, your body and mind, to have the same physical experience of mine as mine. I say mine and yours very loosely there, very lightly. So peace, love, joy, relaxation. The two, both bodies experience the same thing from the understanding that we are the same being. Because the body mind takes its cue from what we're focusing on and what we're believing or not.
Okay.
If I refuse to believe I'm separate to the teacher, then I must be able to access the same kind of experience.
So it's a bit like it is all one experience, but like a diamond with light coming off the different facets.
Yeah.
At the, you know, in the thing, the same.
Yeah. And depending on how many thoughts it's looking through in each body mind, it's obscuring that light from actually flowing out. Mm. But it's still the same light.
Yes.
And then when it's not looking through any thoughts in a clear moment, you know, and then. And the biggest thought that obscures that is I am a separate being, separate to the teacher, separate to the awakened state, separate to everyone else.
Okay. I might just get the contextual field then at some point.
You might just get it. I might just finally have got that one. Mm. To put it in context for everyone, Elaine's always really struggled with that, so don't worry. I really don't like it when you talk about space.
Yeah, I will. I've got another worm thing. It's like, give me that thing, give me that, give me that
thing.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. I'm loving the joy and the lightness that's going on today.
Okay.
We haven't been smoking anything, I promise. Only reality.
Yeah. Mm.
That's really good, though, and on a more serious note, that the field, contextual field, seems more available now as something
relaxes. It's great if I don't think about it, and it just sort of...
Yeah, don't think about it. It'll just get confusing.
Yeah, I think that was the problem. I don't like that word context for some reason. Yeah. Just the word. And because of that, I've thought about it rather than just let it be, whereas stillness or silence or awareness.
You want to do something really, really fun?
Okay.
Well, just get rid of the vibrational attachment to the word context. So I just want you to, you can either say it out loud or you can think it. We can do it together. We could just say the word context over and over until it, like you do with any word. You probably did it as a kid. Any word that you repeat over and over again loses its meaning, its attachment. So context, 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 context. Why did I volunteer to do this? Context, context, context,
context, context,
context, context, context, context. Can you feel it losing its meaning?
Yeah, my tongue is just...
Like, I really can't even bother to say that. Yeah. And I get that, obviously. I mean, the word God, or to me, awareness, had such a negative vibrational attachment to it. Field, when I first felt that out, when I was trying to find a name for it, to try to write it as one of the 14 doorways, contextual field came to me. I don't like that at all. Like, ew. But the more I sat with it and played with it, the more it's a field. It's everywhere, all around me, all at once. And it's saturating every cell of my being. And sometimes I could fall in love with it that way more than anything else. But he's kind of noticing. That's why we have resistance to certain ones, right? Because it has a meaning behind it. Awareness. Oh yeah, that awareness that I tried for 15 years to figure out what it was. Oh, I am this. Like, if I read one more quote from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj about all there is the I am this, I'm going to throw the book against the wall. So I couldn't go in that way, right? Because it was just anger, frustration, failure attached to that.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. All right. Thank you.
Wonderful, as always. Thank you. Okay, so we'll leave it there for today. I think we've had a lot of laughs and some real epiphanies. It's wonderful. So the recordings of this will be uploaded within 24 hours, the same place, if you want to watch again. And just a quick reminder, if you want to send in a question, we've also got lesson two's lesson. I mean, you're all really looking forward to lesson two now. Like, yeah, no. It's really fundamental, really, about how to undo the karmic patterns. And it's easier than you may think. So we'll have lesson two on Sunday. And if you want to ask a question about anything in the course so far or what we do on Sunday, then that needs to be in by Wednesday, 7 p.m. UK time, to make sure it gets into the Q&A. That's Thursday evening, our time, UK, next week. So have a wonderful rest of your day or evening. Or tomorrow, and we'll all be like desperate to know what happens to Robin now, won't we? I'm sure. Yeah. Thank you. Namaste.